tremendous Shabbos here. I was just telling the Rosh Hashiva, I'm not sure if this is a yeshiva, a camp, or a family. It's not a whole thing. But I tell you, I've had the schus to travel in many, many different places. But the geschmack that is here between the Rosh Hashiva, the Rebbeim, and the Talmidim, I'm telling you, you guys are going to be famous in a few months. I'm going to talk about you all over the place. There'll be 600 guys in this yeshiva in a few years. It's Hashem. I don't know if that's good or bad. In my travels, I've had the schus to be in many, many wonderful cities throughout the Yiddish Welt. And one of the places that I enjoy going to, wonderful, wonderful people, is in Antwerp. And in Antwerp, there's a great Rosh Yeshiva. His name is Rabbi Yehuda Traeger. He's the son-in-law of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So you can imagine that if Rabbi Shlomo Zalman chose this man as his son-in-law, what kind of special person he is. So we were once talking and he told me a very interesting shot in a pasuk, and that's going to be our theme for tonight. The pasuk is in the largest capital in Tehillim, which is Tehillim Kuf Yutes. I'm sure many of you know that it has 176 psukim, each one of the Aleph Beis 8 psukim, and in pasuk, in the Ches section, it says like this. David HaMelech says to Hashem, Chashti, V'loi Yismamoti, I hasten and I didn't delay Lishmar Mitzvah Sefer, to do your mitzvahs. So Rav Traeger asked, why does David HaMelech have to say the double Lashon? I hastened and I didn't delay. Obviously, if you hasten, Chashti, so V'loi Yismamoti, you didn't delay to do the mitzvah. So he said he once saw a very interesting shot. Imagine that if somebody, you wake up in the morning and you see somebody's running to the yeshiva, or somebody's running to the minyan, or somebody's running to work. So you say, wow, that guy's a zoritz. Look how excited he is to get there. Hey, so calm it down, the guy's a lazy good for nothing. He woke up 25 minutes late, that's why he's rushing. Because he realizes how late he would be otherwise. So therefore, David HaMelech is saying, Chashti, I hastened, v'lo yismamoti, not that I delayed. The reason that I was running to the Beis Medrash or running to Shul was because I was interested to get there on time, not that I was late because I woke up late. So I remember I once said this someplace and somebody told me an adorable vort. He said the Bava of a Rebbe said it. Now I never heard it from the Bava of a Rebbe, so you can't say that definitely he said it, but it's a great vort nonetheless. And he said that when the alarm clock goes off early in the morning so that you should come on time to the yeshiva, that's the hakol kol yankov. But then when you put on the hand for the snooze alarm, that's the yadayim yadayesov. So I don't know if he said it or not, but it's cute anyway. The Aruch HaTzadikim tells us that midas hazrizus, the mida of zrizus, he tachshit lechol hamidas. In Peirei Shart Esbog, when he talks about zrizus, he says being enthusiastic, that's the jewel of all the characteristics that a person can have. Vehi misakem es kulan. This is the thing that can fix up any part of your life, any part of your life that you feel needs chizuk, that needs to be reinforced. If you approach it with zrizus, you can mamish fix anything. I remember one time I was interested to see how did the Shulchan Aruch, how did the tour, he was after the one, the first one who wrote a Shulchan Aruch, what did he decide to write as the very first words in Shulchan Aruch? Now, any of you who have ever written an essay, or certainly Mitzashem, some of you will write Svaram or books Mitzashem, so you know that the introduction is the last thing that you write, even though that's the first thing that people read, but it's only after you finish the whole work, so you want people to be in a certain frame of mind when they begin to read what you wrote. So certainly the first sentence is always a catchy sentence or something that's going to attract and chop the reader or something that's the theme of what's going on. So I was interested to see what did the tour start this Shulchan Aruch with. And after all, we all know, Arachayim, Yerdei, Ebenezer, Chesha Mishpat, 1704 Simonim Shulchan Aruch. So obviously, the Torah knew everything, and he had to choose from Chazal, and he had thousands and thousands of Medrashim, Psukim, Chazal that he could have chose from. But let's listen to what he chooses, and you'll see something remarkable. He chose the Mishnah and Ovos. Perikei Mishnah Chav Gimel. Yehuda ben Tema Omer. Yehuda ben Tema says, Hevi az kanomer, be bold like a leopard, kal kanesher, swift and light like an eagle, rot katzvi, run like a deer, the gibor koari, be strong like a lion, lasois return avicha shabashamayim, to do the will of your Father in heaven. In other words, of all the things that the Torah could have chosen, he chose the idea of Zrizus. Rots katzvi, gibor koari, run, be swift, lasois return avicha shabashamayim. If you want to be Mekayim, kol ha-Torah kula, you want to be Mekayim anything in the Shulchan Aruch, the first thing you got to know is Zrizus. And when I saw those words, it mamash touched me in such a deep way because of something very, very personal that happened to me many, many years ago. When I was a teenager, every single year, without fail, in the summer, I always went to the same camp. Of course, in those days there weren't as many camps as there are today, but the camp that I chose to go to was always Camp Agoda. And eventually, every summer I was there, counselor, and I thought eventually one day I would be the head counselor, but unfortunately my father passed away, and I had to go into Mila, and that never turned out. But I remember one year, in 1965, right after Pesach time, my father comes over to me, and he says to me, you know, this year I want you to do something special this summer. You're not going to go to camp. And I was wondering, what's wrong? Why am I not going to camp? So he said, I'll tell you what. This year in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have a Knesiyah Gedolah. I said, wow, what's a Knesiyah Gedolah? So he said, Agudas Yisrael is making a gathering of all the Gedolim throughout the whole world, and many, many people are going to come, and they're going to give talks on various inyonim. And I would like you to go. You'll go with your tape recorder, and you'll record everything, and then it's only going to be a two-week Knesiyah. You'll stay there for a month and a half, and like this, you'll get to visit all these people. It'll be very special. Now this was 1965, it was before the Six-Day War. It wasn't like today where so many people go to Eretz Yisrael to learn. It was unheard of in 1965. Very, very few guys from America went to Eretz Yisrael to learn, and very few people traveled to Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't like today that everybody and his brother is traveling so often. Okay, so of course it was the first time that I was on a plane, certainly overseas, and it was an amazing experience. If I live to be 120, I will never forget some of those moments. I remember, of course, in those times, Rav Moshe was alive, Rav Moshe spoke, and I remember Rav Elia Lapian. I remember one of the most stupid things that I ever did in my life. Of course, I was only 17 or 18 at the time. I didn't know who Rav Elia Lapian was. All I knew, I mean, of course, if I would have known, I wouldn't do this thing, but I remember that he opened up the Knesiyah, and he was supposed to say Tillim, and he was so nisragish by the whole tremendous crowd that was there, that instead of just saying the Tillim, leading the Tillim, he started touching the Tillim and giving a drasha. And I thought, who's this old man? He got carried away with himself. I shut my tape recorder, because I didn't want to waste it. I didn't realize that I could have had a great drasha from the great Mashgiach, Rav Elia Lapian, but of course only years later did I realize how foolish it was. But Rav Taladano was there, a Rav from Morocco, he spoke on a night of chinuch. It was just tremendous. Now, again, in 1965, you have to visualize it. It was cell phones. Ridiculous. Nobody had a cell phone. Most people in Eretz Yisrael didn't have telephones. And the way it worked was that if you wanted a call, you had to go either to the post office and make an appointment to either get a call or to make a call, or you had to go to somebody's house on the block, one or two people on the block who had phones. So for the whole 2 months that I was in Eretz Yisrael, not once did I speak to my parents, or did they call me, because there was just no way of communicating through phone. But every single day, without fail, I wrote my parents a letter, and every day without fail, they wrote me a letter, and these letters from my father, Shalom, I still treasure them to this day. Every day they wrote. Near the end of the trip, my father writes me a letter, and it says like this. You know, I know you're coming back right before Slichas, you're coming back to America, the week before Rosh Hashanah. You're going to start this month. But maybe you could do me a favor. I heard, my father writes, that there's a man who goes around in the old section of Yerushalayim. Now, it wasn't the old city because we didn't have that part yet. And the boundary was someplace near where Mir Yeshiva today is. It's called the Mandelbaum Gate. That's where the boundary was. And he said, I hear that somewhere around in these Bukhari and Haizer or someplace, there's an old man who goes around and he wakes up. He has a nusach. He wakes up people for slichas. Maybe you could do me a favor. You'll go with your tape recorder and you'll record it. So I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to go 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I'm not crazy. I'm going to go in the middle of the night and go find this guy who wakes up people for slichas. So I made believe I didn't get the letter, and I answered everything except that letter. A couple days later, I get another letter from my father, and he says to me, he says, maybe you didn't get my previous letter, but I know that you're coming back to America soon, and maybe you could do me a big favor. I heard that there used to be somebody, maybe he's still around today, who wakes up people for slichas. Maybe you could go 3-4 o'clock in the morning and try to record it for me. It would mean something very special. So I was thinking, listen, it's my father, and twice already he asked me, he paid for my ticket. If not for him, I wouldn't even be in Eretz Yisrael altogether. So I decided, okay, fine. I'll try to find and see who this person is, if he does exist. Of course, I was afraid to go myself, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And in those years, in 1965, you didn't have small tape recorders, you didn't have cassettes. You had what's called reel-to-reel. It wasn't as big as a boombox, but it was, you know, substantial. And you had to, when I was walking around, in at night, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, trying with another fellow, trying to find this guy, if he even exists. Because some people said he did exist, some people said he didn't exist. As we're walking, mamash, it's dark. The only lights that you could see is on the other side of the Jordan. It's all pitch black. And all of a sudden, I thought, you know, at night the voice carries. I thought that I heard a guy cry out something. Shtei toy faslichas. That means get up faslichas. So I was thinking, that's what my father wants me to record. I could have said that. That's no big deal. And we try to follow where the voice is coming from. And all of a sudden, Taka, we see a guy in the distance. We're able to make out in the shadows. He's a man who's standing in front of an apartment building, and he's calling out, Shtei Toy Faslichas. I wasn't sure if this is the guy. So I decided I would start running because I didn't want to miss him. And me and this other guy were running with this tape recorder, and the guy gets frightened, like he runs back. Was wilting from me, like, what do you want? Who are you? I said, nah, don't worry, we're Americans, nothing to worry about, right? And he says, what do you want from me? So I said, excuse me, it's nothing to worry about. I said, my father wrote me a letter, and I speak Yiddish, and I said to him in Yiddish, my father wrote me a letter from America. He said that there's somebody who wakes up people for slichas, and he has a beautiful nusach. Maybe you know who that person could be. He said, that's me. I said, really, that's you? You're the one who wakes up people with that beautiful nusach? He says, yeah. So he says, so what do you want? I said, please, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going back to America in 2 days. Maybe you can do me a favor, and maybe you can sing it for me? So he looks at me, and he says, okay. And he clears his throat, and I'm not much embarrassed to do it for you, but I'm going to do it for you anyway, because it's one of the most beautiful and one of the greatest things that I ever heard in my life. Just picture this scene. It's mamish, 4 o'clock in the morning, pitch black. Again, only the lights from a few houses, from lampposts, and lights from the other side of the Jordan. And in the middle of the night, this guy, he's waking up for people for slichas, and he says like this. Yisrael am kodesh, shtei toif la'avodas avodei, rotz katzvi. Then he turns to me and he says, okay? Oh, is that okay? Without exaggeration, my father, Oliver Shalom, must have listened to that tape 200 times. Every day he had to hear it. Every night he had to hear it. And that was the first winter that Rav Shalom Shradron came to America. I will never forget one time we were sitting by the dining room table, and my father says to Rav Shalom, Rav Shalom, I want to bring you back to Yerushalayim for a minute. And he takes out this tape, and Rav Shalom listens to this, and he closes his eyes, and tears start coming down his cheeks. And he said, oh, yeah, I remember when I was a little boy, I used to live in those areas where this fellow was a young man, and he used to sing that. He used to wake up people for slichas. I used to hear it. It was so beautiful. And then when he finished, I wrapped myself in my blanket and I went back to sleep. That was the memory that Rav Shalom Shradron had. But what a beautiful thing. Yisrael am Kodesh. Yisrael, the holy nation. Shtei Toif, wake up, L'Avodas Avodei, to serve your Creator. Rotz Tatzvi, mamish, like in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. Run like a deer, Gibor Kvari, be strong like a lion, Lasois, Ritzoy Navicha Shabbat Shemayim, to do the will every morning, that was blaring. That's how they woke up people 7 o'clock in the morning. And I remember they told me that in Tells, that during the 3 weeks when they didn't play music, that's how they woke up the boys to the, you know, to come to the minyan. It's a beautiful thought to remember. And that's really, as we prepare, taka for slichas, and we prepare for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that's the idea that we have to remember not everything in life, not only Yiras Hashem, not only Torah mitzvahs, but everything has to be done with a tremendous, tremendous reasons, and that's how you get things accomplished. Rav Hutner once said a gevaldik vort, and he said a very beautiful insight into a famous pasuk that many of us know. It says in Shmoyis Yudbeis, Pasuk Yudzayin, Ushmartem es ha-matzos. You should watch the matzos. So as the Rosh Hashiva said by Shalosh Shudis, many times you have a word in the Torah that can be read one way and read another way as well, because after all, in the Torah there are no nekudos. So Rashi tells us, the Pashto Pshat in the Pasuk is, Shelo Yavoy L'Dechimot. You gotta watch the matzos so it shouldn't come to chametz. You gotta make sure that you bake it up very fast, less than 18 minutes. However, the Gemara says, Al Tehi Kore Yasam Matzos. There's another way to read this. Not only Ushmartem Esam Matzos, Ushmartem Esam Mitzvos. The same spelling, the Mem Tzadik Bov Tov. And it says, Kedera She'ein Machmitzen Esam Matzos. Just like you don't delay in doing matzos and baking the matzos, Kach Ein Machmitzen Esam Mitzvos. So you don't delay if a mitzvah comes to your hand, in Bo Yodcha, Oisi Oisi Miyad. You do it right away. So Rav Hutner said, a gevaldik vort. He said, the Torah wanted to teach us about tzrizos. Why did it teach us in this way? After all, the pasuk is Shmoyis Yudbeis, pasuk Yudzayin. So why did the Rabbeinu Shlomo Chazal learn it dafka from this pasuk? So he said a tremendous yisoy, and it's in Pachad Yitzchok, in the Maimon Aleph, in the Yonam of Pesach. And he writes like this. Ki chasorin hazrizos. If somebody lacks zrizos, b'avodas Hashem, ein perushe sheyesh kan heder amaisa shel zrizos. It's not the pshat. He did the mitzvah, but he's missing zrizos. But the mitzvah he did, no. El sheyesh kilkul chiyuvi. There's a damage. There's a corruption in the essence of the mitzvah. That's why the Torah taught it to us. Ushmartem et ha-mitzvahs. In the mitzvah, in the word itself, mitzvah. The Torah wanted to show us that if there's a chasaron, then there's a chasaron not only in the tzrizos, but there's a chasaron in the mitzvah itself. Hamavzik shleimus tzurosa shel hamaisa hamitzvah. In other words, that we shouldn't think that you do the mitzvah, whether it's davening or learning or lulav or esrei, and then if you do it with tzrizos, so you score extra points. No, if you don't do the mitzvah with tzrizos, then it's felt in the mitzvah itself. That's why that lesson of shmartem es hamatzos, of shmartem es hamitzvos, is all tied together as one. So I'll tell you a very interesting story that happened in Eretz Yisrael. This is a story perhaps that can happen only in Eretz Yisrael, because it has to do with Peiris Shvius. Now, those of you who have been to Eretz Yisrael, and I remember that when my son was in Eretz Yisrael, and he was showing me all the different halachas about Peiris that grow in the year of Shemitah, so the next year when people get them, you not only do you have to eat them, but there's a certain kedusha, you're not allowed to give it to a goy, you can't even throw out the pits, you have to wrap it in a certain way, and put it away someplace, and it spoils by itself, but you can't just throw it out in the garbage, because there's kedusha to Peiris Shvius. So there was this fellow, who, it was the beginning of the year when they were getting already the Peiris of Shvius, and people were learning the halachas. So this guy goes to his refrigerator before he's ready to leave, either as a Rebbe someplace, and he sees there's two apples in his refrigerator. So he figures he's not going to eat them now when he comes home for lunch. He knows he comes home before his kids come home, so nobody's going to take the apples, they'll be there, and then he'll eat the apples. He comes back after Seder, and he looks in the refrigerator, the apples are gone. So he turns to his wife, he says, what happened? There were two apples that were here this morning. She said, oh, the goya was just here and she left. She was carrying a bag and she asked me for the apples and I gave her the apples. He said, what are you talking about? How could you give the apples to a goy? It's Peiris Shvius. You're not allowed to give it to a goy. He said, oh, she said, oh, man, I forgot you're not allowed to give it to a goy. So what would most of us do? Fine, it's an accident, it happened. No, this guy decides, no, he's going to get it back. He runs downstairs to see if she's got on the bus yet. And as soon as he comes downstairs, the people tell him the bus left a few minutes ago. Okay, so now you tried already, right? What more? So the guy's not going to wait for the next bus, because this next bus is not going to catch this one. So he stops the cab and he gets a taxi and he goes to the Tachna Merkazit, the central bus station, because he knew that she had to get onto a second bus. Sure enough, he gets onto the second bus and he says to the driver, "Driver, do me a favor, I don't have to travel today, but I have somebody, I think somebody might be on this bus. I have to speak to that person. Just let me look around, see if that person is here, and then I'll leave." So he looked like an alpha guy. The bus driver says, "Quick look, and we have to go, but just take a quick look." He takes a look, he sees the lady in the back. He says to her, "If was a kid, where's the bag?" And she says to him, "Alti, alti, don't touch me, don't call the police." And she gives him the back of the bag with all the jewelry that she stole that day. She had stolen the jewelry, and she wanted, she knew she was never going to come back, and she wanted to cover it up, so she saw the apple, so she wanted the apple to cover it up in that bag. So of course, not only did he get back the jewelry, of course he got back the apples also. But how did this happen? That's only because of the zrizos. That's because of the zrizos that a person had for a mitzvah of perish shviyas. Rav Holman says a gevaldik of art. And I always tell people, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, call me before you go. Anybody who wants, you can always call me. And I'll tell you which people you should see in Eretz Yisrael. And I don't mean this in a bad way, obviously. But the great tourist attractions in Eretz Yisrael are not the hotels, they're nicer hotels in other places. And it's not even the museums there. Okay, maybe the Eretz Yisrael has the best museums, but then we don't have to go to Eretz Yisrael for museums. You go to Eretz Yisrael, there are many great, great people. And many of them who speak English as well, and the wives speak English. And there's so much to learn from these people. And one of the people you should go to see, while he's still in this world, he should live to be 120. He's in his 90s already. And that's what Shlomo Volber, the Mashgiach of the Belt. And many of you know, you read his Svarim Alei Shur, tremendous, tremendous Svarim with great insights. So I remember I was once by him with my son Taka. We got so many great, great lessons of Chinuch. And one of the things that he writes in Alei Shur, he writes like this: Minifloys Lashon HaKodesh. From the wonders of Lashon HaKodesh we see, Sheshoyresh Milas Ratzayn. What is the Shoyresh of the word Ratzayn? Ratzayn means desire. Who Ratz, that's Reish Tzadik, that's running. Ki Masha Adam Reitzah, that which you really want, L'sham Hu Ratz, that's where you run. So you watch yourself the next time you have to make an appointment someplace. Just observe yourself. Are you rushing? Or are you just moseying along very slowly? And by the time you get there, fine, you'll be there. Watch how you run to the minion if you do run all together. Or watch how you run to make the first pitch at a ball game. Right? Everybody, not only do we want to be at the first pitch at a ball game, we want to be there for batting practice. Right? So everybody goes early. And we're running. So if you're running, that's what shows, that's what runs on you. That's really what you want. So okay, so you figure by 7 o'clock you'll come to the minyan. If it's 7 and you come 5 after 7, so it'll still also be okay. It's not that way. A person, that which you really want in life, you do with zrizos and you do with tremendous, tremendous excitement. I want to tell you what's the pshat, how a person is mezareis himself. Rosh Hashiva spoke to me before about Rav Gifter, who was here in Waterbury many, many years ago as a rov. So I remember that, unfortunately, when he passed away, so I called the family to be Menachem Mova. Now I had this chus, even though that I never learned in tells, but many times I would go to Camp Aguda because he would be there. This was already after I was married, long after that. I wasn't part of camp anymore, but I would go there just to interview him. Rabbi Bernstein knows Shalom Spitz. I went once with Rav Shalom. We went and we spent hours talking to Rav Gifter about the old tells and things like that. So, and he was very, very nice to me. So I remember I called his daughter after he passed away, and she told me a remarkable thing. She said that in his room, in his high school, in his dormitory room, he used to hang up pictures of Gedolim. So I can imagine the pictures of Gedolim in his day. Who did he admire? Probably from the previous generation, Rav Meir Shapiro, Rav Chaim Loiser, the Chofetz Chaim, those type of people. But among all the pictures that he had an 8x10 frame of each one. He had an 8x10 frame that was empty. It was a white sheet of paper. And on it, between all these pictures, he wrote 3 words. Why not you? Imagine, so every day he would wake up and see all these pictures, and then right in the middle, he had why not you? So I want to tell you a great thing. I see here some boys that I know from Camp Monk. So I remember I once said this in Camp Monk to Eli Monk. It's a tremendous machana. So the next year I came back. What did he have? He had a whole wall of pictures of Gedolim and a mirror right in between. And on it, it said, why not you? So every time I go there, I say, there was. I don't look bad in those pictures, you know, with everybody else. Take a look at yourself in the mirror. It doesn't look so bad. What a fabulous idea. Why not you? Right? And with a mirror, what an iPhone. So it's still there. I know some boys here, I don't want to get the names wrong, but some of the kids here that I've seen in Camp Monk, Omo, with that, right outside the dining room, with that mirror is. Tell you another thing of Zrizas, unbelievable. I have a good friend, his name is Rabbi Yehuda Leib Lewis, he's the chief rabbi, chief dayan in Amsterdam, in Holland. So he tells me that they had there a kohen, and he's a wonderful person, he's already Nebuch in the Elam HaEmes, his name was Moshe Cohen, and he always felt bad that he could never participate in a Levaya, that he couldn't do a Tahara, that he couldn't carry the Nifter, that he couldn't be involved in a Chevra Kadisha. It's a holy mitzvah, it's a chesed shel emes, and because he was a Kohen, obviously he's not allowed to do it. So one night they had a board meeting, and he was on the board of the shul, he was an Askin, he was involved with the Tzibor, and they announced at this board meeting that they're buying a new plot of land, because unfortunately the old cemetery was getting filled up, and now they needed a new area for a cemetery. So the day they bought the land, this guy goes out and he digs up the first grave. Why? Because once a dead person is in there, he can't go there anymore. So like this, he dug up the first grave before anybody was there. So like this, he has a chelik in doing a chesed shel emes. That's a pshat. A guy is mezaris himself. So I want to tell you two phenomenal stories. Many of you know here that I'm a moel, and a few guys came over to me to tell me that I was their moel. We're not going to ask for a raise of hands. We don't want to embarrass anybody. But Lamaisa, I got to tell you these two stories, and they taught me a fabulous, fabulous lesson. I got a call a couple years ago from a Russian fellow. Now the guy was not from, had come from Russia a few years ago. He was trying to be from, yeah, how much could he learn? After all, he never went to a yeshiva or anything. And his English wasn't that great, but you could see on the telephone that he was a wonderful person. His name was Ivan. And Ivan's baby was born on a Tuesday. And one of the things that many non-Frum people have difficulty with is understanding the concept of Mitzas Hayom Kekulay. So when you tell them that the bris has to be done on the eighth day, so they figured, well, Tuesday, the day that the baby was born, if he was born a few hours before sunset, that doesn't count. So they start counting from the next day. And of course, they're going to get it wrong. Because if a baby is born, let's say, Tuesday in the afternoon before Shkia, even though there's just only a few hours left to the day, that day is counted as the first. So he calls me up, and we go through the list of items, the ointment, gauze pads, and everything. And he says to me, Rabbi, when we got to do the bris? I said, we got to do it on Tuesday. What time? I said, well, the nicest thing is to do it in the morning. Zrizos, you show excitement. He said, I can't do it in the morning. I got to do it at night. I go to work. I said, you can't do a bris at night. Yemashmini has to be on the eighth day. He said, what's the latest that I could do it? I said, you could do it a half hour before sunset. I figured a few people come late. You got to do it before the Shkia. So it's certainly okay as long as you do it on the eighth day before the Shkia. So he said, okay, that's fine. And I tell him again, you count the eighth day, Tuesday, the first day, we're going to do it next Tuesday. And I make up, we're going to do it at 4 o'clock. Fine. I leave Queens early because that's already rush hour traffic. And I come into Manhattan. I park the car and we get off the elevator. So you don't usually have to ask what apartment. There's usually so much noise that you would know automatically. But all of a sudden, I realize when I got off the elevator, it's very quiet on this floor. And my first feeling, my first gut feeling, reaction was that they switched the place of the bris and forgot to tell me. And that has happened. You know, they decide that grandmother wants to have it, or they can do it in the shul, and they go through the whole family list, they tell everybody, but the moil's not on the family list. So they told everybody, they forgot to call the moil. And that has happened at times. But, so that was my first inclination. You know, there's something wrong here because I don't hear any noise. But still, I decided, okay, I'll go down to 4D, knock on the door, 4D, ring the bell. A babushka opens the door, grandmother, she's in a house coat. I said, excuse me, don't we have a bris here today? She says, go speak to my daughter, Natasha. Well, Natasha's sitting on the couch with the baby, also certainly not dressed for a bris. I say, excuse me, don't we have a bris here today? It's almost 4 o'clock. She says, I told my husband it's today. I told him to call you last night. I knew he made a mistake. Everybody's coming tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 o'clock. I know you're right. And I told him to call you because I knew he made a mistake. Okay, by the time we figure this all out, I figure she's going to tell me, okay, go home. I mean, what am I supposed to do? She's not going to let me do a bris on this kid. So then she says to me, wait a second, I'll call my husband. So I said, where's your husband? Oh, he's in the gym. He's working out. That's what he meant, I guess, work. But okay, fine. He's in the gym. He's working out. So I call him up. I say, Ivan, you know, I'm sorry. Maybe there was a misunderstanding. You know, I thought I told you that the bris is today. He says, Rabbi, I'm so sorry. I misunderstood. He said, how much time do we have left? I thought he was going to tell me to go home. He says, how much time? I look at my clock. Now it's already 12 after 4. I said, we got, a little bit more than 15 minutes. He says, Rabbi, you get everything ready. I'll be there. I said, where are you? He says, I'm in the gym a couple blocks away. I'll run. You get everything ready. We're going to do the bris. I couldn't believe it. He's going to do the bris with nobody there. Sure enough, about 22 after 4, and I'm watching my watch every second because we got to do it before 4:30. He comes running in his gym suit, cut-out gym suit. Quickly, he washes up fast. I give him a yarmulke, and he sits down, and we do the bris. The only one that was there was me, him, his mother-in-law, and his wife, and that was that. After the bris, I was so misspoiled that this guy would do the bris, bisman, and knowing that everybody now was coming tomorrow, I said to him, Ivan, I don't want you to say a word to anybody. I'm coming back here tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Don't say one word to anyone. The next day, 4 o'clock, I get off the elevator. Oh, so much noise. You don't have to worry where 4D is. You can tell 50 people are there. We walk in. I don't say anything to anyone. Set up everything. And then we bring in the baby, Baruch Abba, you know, Rabbi Shor, we need his guitar, you know, to bring in the baby, I think he much costs like he does. But anyway, fine, we bring in the baby, and everybody's mamash ready for a bris. I put my arm around Ivan, I said, Rabbi, I want to tell you something. You have a very, very special friend here. You see, this bris was done yesterday. And today, there's only bagels and lox, but no bris. Because this man, even though that he didn't have the opportunity to go to a yeshiva, in his heart, he understood what it meant to do a bris on time. And he was a zoritz. He came running back to be able to do the bris before the shkia, so that he should do what Hashem wanted. And he wasn't concerned about family or friends. He wanted to do the mitzvah the right way. And of course, then we said akofen, and we named the baby and everything, and it was beautiful, a tremendous, tremendous kiddush Ein Shamayim. But then a few weeks later, a story that was even better than this one happened. I could not get over this. This was a young, modern Orthodox guy. The guy lived in Woodmere, and the baby had been very yellow, and the doctor poskened that the bris has to be on a Friday morning, a day late. In other words, the eighth day was Thursday. So I'm driving back from a late afternoon bris in New Jersey, and I'm on the other side of the Verrazano. Those of you from the city know that it's impossible to get through Staten Island and the Verrazano in rush hour. And I'm not even over the Verrazano yet, and my wife calls me. And she says, you got to speak to Ezra. He's in a panic. He's on the phone. I said, I know, Ezra. That's the Friday bris. That's tomorrow morning. She said, no, but you must speak to him right away. Okay, I speak to him. I get on a conference call. I say, Ezra, is everything okay? He says, not really. I said, what happened? He said, my wife just came home for the pediatrician. I was not expecting her, he said, to go to the doctor. And now the doctor said the baby's not yellow. Doesn't that mean we have to do the bris today? I said, Ezra, I'm on the other side of the Verrazano. I can't get to Woodmere in time. We got about 20 minutes left. There's no way I can get there in time. He says, but don't we have to do the bris today? The baby's not yellow anymore. I said, no problem. I'll make some calls quickly, and I'll give you the name of some oil in Lawrence or Farakwe, whatever. You'll get a oil, and you know there's something that lives not far from you. He says, do me a favor, call my wife and arrange it with her. I said, what do you mean call your wife? Where are you? He says, I'm in Manhattan. I said, Manhattan? How are you going to get to the bris before shkia? I look to be 120. I'll never forget what he told me. He said, Rabbi, it's more important for me that my son should know for the rest of his life that he had his bris on time than it is that he should know that the bris was delayed one day just so that his father should be there. And wouldn't you know it, Ataka got him a local moyel, and they did the bris, and the only ones that were there was the moyel, the baby, the grandmother, and the mother. And I never had the guts to ask who was the sander. Because I'm afraid it was the Schweizer nurse. And happened. When I wanted to print this story in Reflections of the Market, the guy said to me, you can't print it. I said, what do you mean? Why shouldn't I print it? He said, my parents are still angry at me what I did. Because the next day in the Young Israel of Woodmere, of course, you know, 200 people came. And if you've ever been in the Young Israel of Woodmere, they don't just come, right? They're like, hey, they come with the trains and all the you know, the, how they set up a bris in Woodmere. It's not just some. So, of course, there was no bris. But the point is, tremendous, tremendous rizus. So I just want to tell you one more story, and then we'll end with a great, great thought, a genius thought. I want to tell you a story that you will see why I feel that this is tremendous. In the late summer of 1941, there was a man, his name was Rav David Dreyer. He was a shochet, and he lived in the north part of England in a town which was not yet famous in those days. The town was called Gateshead. And this Rav David Dreyer wanted to have a kollel built in Gateshead. But he needed the right man. So he wrote 22 letters in 1941 to all the Rabbonim in England who he felt would be a candidate to build this kollel. And he begged them to come, and he said that he would support them and he would make sure that the thing would fly. Out of those 22 letters, 18 didn't even answer. 3 wrote him back no. And 1 person replied. Does anybody know who that 1 person was who built the kollel in Gateshead? Somebody say, Rav Eliyahu Dessler, the Michtam Eliyahu. Rav Eliyahu Dessler was the only one of all the 22 Rabbonim that said, I'll undertake the Achrayus, I'll go with you, and we'll build it together. And of course, he changed the face of Torah in England forever. Gateshead, if you ever have the opportunity to go there, it's like an 8-9 block area. Such Torah, such Yerushalmayim. It's not imaginable. It's Kedusha Admiyot. It's an incredible, incredible place. And of course, through that filter down, Rav Matas Yol Salman learned over there at Gateshead. So we have Torah all over the world from those great Talmid HaChachamim that were there that Rav Eliyahu Dessler helped start. But I want to tell you something that he wrote. He wrote this later in life, and he looked back at what he accomplished. And I'm sure that Rav Eliyahu Dessler was a very, very humble person. And he probably looked back at everything that he accomplished, and he figured, how in the world could he have done such a thing? Where does it come to him to do such a thing? And he writes like this. Yesh Zoicha. And he writes, you could look it up in Michtam Eliyahu, volume 1, page 20, in the Abdom. Sometimes a person is zoicha to do something beyond his own madrega. Even a schus that's not even his own. Why? Because he responds to a call when somebody calls. And he writes, if they need this person to be misakin something in the world, and even though he might not be on that level to accomplish that great thing, nobody else wants to get involved except him. He's zoicha to all the siyata d'shmaya because he was willing to step forward. And then he writes, Lepa'om Mira, sometimes it looks like he's talking about himself, of course. Of course, he realizes how great he was, but he was humble. He said, sometimes you see a person who's matzliach to accomplish a great thing. Beruma shel olam mamish. Asher believes suffer came schus l'klal Yisrael, to suffer for the schus l'klal Yisrael. Why was he zoicha? Mishum sha'achirim lehivinu lehiskarev le'inyan HaKadosh Ahu, because others didn't get involved in that holy thing. So Rav Eliyahu Dessler was willing to step forward. He stepped forward where nobody else would, and he changed the face of Torah in Europe, not only in England, but in Europe, and everybody has gained from that. And that's what I want to say about your Rosh Hashiva and the Rav that are sitting right here. Maybe everybody here will never know the whole story because these two people are too humble to tell the story. So I'm not going to reveal the whole story. But there were people who wanted to build a yeshiva here. And they were asked, they asked others. And And they said, no, we can never do it. It'll never happen in Waterbury. We can never build such a yeshiva like you're trying to build it. But Rabbi Aaron stepped forward, and Rabbi Harris stepped forward, and they built this yeshiva. And that's why that's the siman of zrizos, the siman of willing to step in where others, that's why their schus is 50 times what anybody else's is in their level. Why? Because they were willing to take the chance. They threw themselves into it, together with Rabbi Kalish and Rabbi Bernstein and all the other wonderful rabbeim that I hear. I don't know all the names yet, Rabbi Cohen, Rabbi Fishman, Rabbi Thaler. I know some of the names. And of course, Wilts. Without Wilts, nothing happens, right? And all the wonderful people that are here, Yitzchok Rabinowitz, I believe his name is, all the wonderful people that took the chance to come here, and it could have been convenient. No, it's never going to work. Waterbury, who knows Waterbury? It's right next to Mississippi, right? But the Teretz is, someday people are going to come here, and they're going to wake up, and they're going to see that just like Rabbi Leo Dessler took a chance and threw himself into it and built a Maaser of Torah that was known Ada Yom Hazeh, that's the same thing. And all of you should feel so proud and so lucky and so fortunate that you're all in it at the beginning. What's 4 years in the history of a yeshiva? Yeshiva could last 100 years. But it's you, all of you, that are building the great foundation for your children and grandchildren that will come and learn here sometime. And for your children and grandchildren that will learn from the rabbeim that are here. I must tell you, one of the most precious calls I ever got in my life. I can't tell you how proud I am that my son is now a rebbe here. So his fourth grade rebbe, Rabbi Brody from Tiferes Moshe, calls last week and he says like this, I want you to know that I'm so proud of my Talmud. My Talmud who I had in fourth grade is now teaching in a yeshiva gedolah and my grandson is in his class. So where's the Brody boy? Is he here? Where are you? That's right, there he is. So imagine, yeah, he deserves a round of applause for his grandfather. To teach a fourth grader, and that fourth grader eventually is teaching that Rebbe's grandson. It's unbelievable. And that's how Torah is built. That's how generations are built. And that's what all of you are doing here. I've had the wonderful schus to spend Shabbos here. I will never forget it. I hope it's the first time of many, many times that I'm going to come back here. And I just want to end with this gewaldige, brilliant word. And I'm so happy to say it because the Rosh Hashiva spoke before about the brilliance of the Soloveitchiks and what family is. And this taka took place at a Sheva Brachas. This was a Sheva Brachas that Rabbi Elul Soloveitchik made for his son in Bnei Brak. And everybody was sitting around and they were singing different negunim. And Rabbi Elul was in a very light mood. So every song that people sang, whether it was Kol Sosa, Kol Simcha, Simitai, B'Mazel Tov, whatever they sang, he had a medrash, he had a story, he had a bar, something. There was an old man that was sitting there. An old man, Mamash at Tzaddik. As a matter of fact, they just wrote a sefer about him. Rav Zev Edelman. He was talking to Edelman Mensch, a very big Tzaddik in Bnei Brak. He was also sitting at the Sheva Brachas. So he's sitting at the Sheva Brachas and they said, Nu Rav Zev, sing something, L'kovod the Chosam Bekala. He was a shtickle embarrassed. Not going to sing for the Chosam Bekala. So he decided, you know what? He'll sing in honor of the Brisker Rav. So there's a famous song that they sing when an Odom Godel walks into the room. Many of you know it. So they started singing and he was singing for the Brisker Rav and it was mamish very, very levitic. Of course, when they finished singing, everybody was in a great mood. They look at Rav Elul, no, let's see a darshan on this one. Had nothing to do with Chosam Bekala. Listen to what he thought of on the spot. It's mamish brilliance. That's what a Soloveitchik is all about. Take a look in Tilim Samach Aleph, Pasuk Zayin. Yomim al yimei melech toysif. Days should be added to the life of the king. So the Radak has a machloikis. Who is the king referring to in this pasuk? Some say that it's referring to David HaMelech. So then I understand David HaMelech was supposed to live only 70 years. Yomim al yimei melech toysif from his father that he should have more years. Fine. So David should have more years. But there's others who hold it's Mashiach. And once Mashiach comes, he's going to live forever. So what's with that? Yom HaYim HaMelech Tzitzit? Are you going to answer forever? Zok to Brisker Rav, He should come earlier. If he comes earlier, the earlier he comes, it's Yonamayim and Alatayzit, the brilliant Eichfal. Because the earlier he comes, the longer he's going to live. So the Eibush should help that all of us, from tonight, and you may help, should be makabel on ourselves, zrizus b'limud, zrizus in tefillah, zrizus in chesed, zrizus in Abbas Yisrael, zrizus in everything. Then the Eibush will, Hashem will answer us back with zrizus. Bring us Mashiach with zrizus. It should be in our time. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.